Unlocked, a podcast by 100 Collectors. Welcome to Unlocked, the podcast that brings you closer to the creative minds and industry leaders shaping the art and NFT world. Join us as we deep dive into fine art and digital treasures through insightful interviews with acclaimed artists, visionary curators, and pioneers from the NFT community. Get inspired by their journeys, learn from their experiences, and gain invaluable knowledge on navigating the ever-evolving landscape of collecting. Unlocked is a podcast brought by 100 Collectors, a private club for discerning art and NFT collectors.
Hello, I'm Delfina, initiator of 100 Collectors, and I'm your host today.
Cello is the founder of 11 Yellow, an 11-year-old software laboratory for high-risk, high-rewards ideas. In the art space, 11 Yellow was part of the founding team of Boto, the first autonomous robot artist that's now 3 years old, has had exhibitions all over the world, and has sold pieces at Christie's. He's also part of Collection Solo, a private contemporary art collection based in Madrid.
Hi, Cello. How are you? It's a pleasure to have you here with us today. Thank you very much for your time. Well, actually, we met a couple of months ago, and I remember the feeling of, let's say, being back home, because it's the first time that I meet someone from Spain living here in Lisbon. And it's great, you know, meeting sometimes people from one's country when we live abroad. Well, maybe you could tell us how you ended up here in Lisbon, what brought you here?
Yeah, sure. As a quick intro, like I ran a technology company, right? And we started 11 years ago. And out of those 11 years, five, we had like a core team that we were traveling together through the world. And we spent some time in, mostly in Southeast Asia. So yeah, living in Indonesia, Philippines, Singapore, Hong Kong, did a bit of a trip. And then, just on the way back to Europe, you know, like there was like this hype about Lisbon. I hadn't been here many times, honestly. I've been to Porto many times because, you know, like being Galician, going to Porto is almost like not moving away from Galicia. Yes. It's very, it feels about the same. But Lisbon, I didn't know it much. And you came, checked it out. And yeah, I just think it's a great combination of many things. It's a beautiful city. It has a vibrant scenes of different stuff, art, tech. It's the weather is probably the best in Spain and Portugal.
That's true.
Yeah, difficult to compete with the city, I think. So yeah, that's why I came.
Well, you've traveled a lot, and it's great to have you here now in Lisbon. And actually, which is great is that you're also a collector, one of the 100, actually, which is we're very happy to have you with us. Cello, tell me, what brought you in the art world and for this passion of collecting art? Because as you just said, you are more from the tech world, so I would love to know.
Yeah, the other day I went into my parents' house and I checked a computer I had when I was a kid, like 15 or 14, and it's full of folders with like images that I liked on the internet. I was saving, putting
really?
Them in the folders. It's quite cringy if you look at what I liked at 14, but still, like, you know, like I had this, all of these images saved and categorized in the different things that I had, you know, like, I was liking the era. Well, probably that was like Tumblr or something like that back then, or you know, those kind of image sharing sites. And yeah, I mean, I think that's like the, I always like design and certain kinds of aesthetics, and I would save things, and then while I was getting older, I started, you know, like maybe getting a bit more involved in helping some artist friends and to try to bring some projects to life. And then it was then my relationship with David and Anna from Collection Solo where I really got a bit, at least, I mean, no, like more like to understand a bit more like the traditional or like the sort of like the bigger art world and understand how things work and see much more art thanks to them, because I was traveling with them at the beginning when the Collection Solo was being built 10 years ago when there was no space or anything.
Yeah.
So that's more or less the path, like from the curiosity of liking or saving and seeing things digitally that interested me, to getting into that more side of the more formal art world, and then later, I mean, lately with all of the NFT sort of thing, you know, like I also like had the opportunity to participate in some NFT projects and to collect some, you know, it makes it easier to collect digital art. It's basically the same thing as saving the things in the folder.
Yeah.
It's just that now, you know, like with it, it adds another layer on top. But
at actually,
the end,
what's
it's similar, I think.
What type of images you were collecting at the time? I mean, images of art or images of things that you liked? I mean, was it, what I mean is, was it like images of pieces of art, of sculpture, of photography, or other kind?
Everything. I had a lot of, you know, like there were some images, you know, there was folders full of like jokes and memes and things like that, and folders full of, you know, like maybe a lot of like 3D art that I liked, maybe like some digital creators that were doing like kind of like glitch art and things of that sort, you know, like very early days for this, but things, you know, like just anything that you would look at on your computer screen and be like, this is beautiful, I want to save it, right? Like it could, you know, maybe just some were just images of things, you know, or,
yes,
or photography or whatever, but yeah, it's this kind of like, you know, like saving things.
That's super interesting.
Funny.
But you started collecting more, let's say, traditional physical art, right? And then little by little, you entered more in the digital. Even if you were already attracted by it, collecting,
yeah,
you started later, right?
It's because, you know, like I got interested in physical art before, because back when I got interested in physical art, there was no way of actually collecting digital art.
Yes.
Right? Like there were some ways, but, you know, like, Even you know, like even some of that digital art was like shown to you through the traditional art world, right? Like you would go to a gallery and you buy some piece that is digital art or digitally edited art.
Yeah.
But so it's not that I preferred physical art at the beginning. It's just that there was the normal, you know, like it was what it was there, right? Like I
yes.
think that this is maybe 15 years ago or 17 years ago. Right.
Yeah.
So I think in the last maybe 10 years, it's, you know, it's more common to see people collecting digital art, and then especially in the last 5. But yeah, that's why. Also, like, I mean, I do think I also think that when something physical, it's there is much more stories to be told with a physical piece than with a digital piece, I think, because
okay.
we are still 95% physical. Right. I don't know how the world is going to look like in 2200, but today we're still mostly physical. And there are more stories to be told with something physical, I think. There's some great stories to be told with something digital, but, you know, it's a more niche thing. It's a smaller thing, I think.
But when you say great stories, you mean about the things that are created or the way you experience the art? Or both?
Anything that an artist wants to tell you.
Okay.
It's going to be, on a way, a narrative, a story, something that they think, something that they want to portray to the world. And they are still 95% physical beings that live in a world,
yeah,
you know, that experience things in a world, that have emotions. You know, it's not it's, you know, like it's mostly, I mean, 95%, I'm making up the number, right? But it's,
yeah,
but you know, like we are still more, you know, just our lives have a small digital component and mostly it's physical. So I think that when artists express their views or their ideas to the world, it's still easier to express things physically. We also understand things physically much better, like, you know, like
yes.
it's much easier to see,
yeah, we connect more,
a sculpture
say.
And feel moved by it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's much easier to feel moved by a sculpture than by a 3D sculpture, right? Like you can also feel moved by a 3D sculpture on your screen, but it's a different feeling, I think.
Totally. No, I completely agree. I completely agree, which is actually, I mean, this is one of the biggest questions that we have. I mean, but even maybe you as a collector, when you buy a digital art piece, and we as curators as well, is how actually to display digital art in the physical space. But
yeah.
But with that idea of how to make the experience as we know how you can experience art. Yeah, I completely agree. But what in digital art interests you most? And it can be technique, it can be, yeah, well, mostly technique or type of art.
To me, coming back to the 95% analogy, like I think that what interests me most in digital art are the things that can only be expressed digitally.
Okay.
So maybe these are stories or narratives around things that you wouldn't be able to explain physically.
Okay.
You wouldn't be able to give you an example, like if you create a piece of art that's say something digital that it's on a screen and it's reacting to some digital information that's moving on the internet, that's something that, you know, like it is natively, it's digital, right? Like you cannot do the same thing with a painting. You cannot do the same thing with a sculpture. Say that, for example, if you are creating something with an artificial intelligence algorithm, you know, it's something that it is either digital or it isn't. And that's kind of like what interests me the most. Like the artists that are able to say, to tell a story with these techniques in a way that, you know, like it touches that 5% of you that is digital, right? Like it touches your understanding of the internet, of technology, of machines. To me, it's a bit that, like, that. I see very little value in, say, you know, if you think of NFTs or something like that, like someone that gets something that could be done very beautiful, very beautiful in a physical way, and then it's done digitally because it's an NFT, yes, and I can sell it through an NFT. I don't connect much with that. Mm-hmm. But now, for example, if you use an NFT to, for example, do some sort of art that is looking on chain and it's making, you know, like telling a story about something that's happening on chain, for example, that's either NFT or it isn't, right? Like there's no other way to do it. So on a way, I see digital art as, you know, like I'm interested in the digital art that tells something, that tells a story that only your digital self would understand. Let's call it that way.
Okay. And well, now that you enter in the amazing field of AI, what do you think about AI and art? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that AI will fundamentally change the way society works. It will take quite some time, but I think it will fundamentally change society how society works. And anything that fundamentally changes how society works generates, you know, like it just changes all of the stories told in the world, and so it's going to change how art is portrayed in the world for sure. I don't know if for the, you know, like I don't have a judgment of this is good, this is bad, I like it or not. It's just that I think the change is going to be so big that it's impossible that there is not great art created around it. As a technique, it's super interesting. Those that master it, you know, like it's has this feeling of like, wow, this feels like magic. And I assume it's very similar to those, you know, like which, you know, like in the generation of seeing computers for the first time and being able to digitally edit an image, it's something that, you know, like back in the day, people would be like, wow, this is magic. This cannot, how does this work? Or the first person that saw a photography, you know, like they would be like, this is magic.
Yeah, of course.
I think it has a similar weight in the sense of like how big this the technique in itself is. There's a lot of backlash, a lot of people that really don't like it, that, you know, like they say that the algorithms are copying other artists and so on. And there is maybe some truth to it, you know, like we'll have to see how everything evolves, if, you know, how we understand copyright and how we understand what really creativity is. Because if you remember, like if you go 3 years ago or four, like before, 5 years ago, people would be like, well, the last thing that would be replaced by AI is creative jobs and things like that. You know, like then you see everything that's happening with image.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
So it's.
Of course. But it's interesting. Actually, it's last week we had an encounter because we started having some of these talks organized by us, by 100 Collectors. And after the talk, there were some questions. And one of the questions was, what do you think about a machine being an artist? So imagine if actually there is no one like the feeding the machine. The machine is already fed with all the content that needs to be fed with to create pieces. And there is no one controlling the machine. So in a way, the machine becomes the artist. And here, appears the big question that we have. So what is actually an artist? Do you think a machine can actually become an artist?
That's kind of like what we try to do with Boto.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. Actually, can you just tell quickly what is Boto so that people listening to us understand?
So Boto is a project that we started with Mario Klingemann and Colección Solo 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind it is it's Mario's idea, right? Like it's his full creative idea of thinking of like, okay, like he was someone creating art with AI algorithms and wanted to twist the idea towards, can you create an algorithm that it just creates art by itself and the algorithm is the artist. Mm-hmm. So we basically, we use the, this algorithm creates 350 pieces every week. Mm-hmm. These pieces are voted by people in the community. Mm-hmm. These people in the community are incentivized through an asset that it's kind of like a bit like owning shares in the artist. So the artist really is owned by people that own these assets.
Yeah.
And they vote on the images. Then there's one image that's chosen and that image is auctioned. And it auctions every week, right? On a public auction that anyone can participate. Mm-hmm. Just for some context, like Boto has sold like about like $3 and something million worth of art so far. It's had some big secondary sales. It's auctioned at Christie's. Mm-hmm. And it is today the only example of like what an autonomous artist would be. Mm-hmm. The technology is still not there for the artist to be like a completely autonomous agent, right? Like it is still not there. We can create images with AI, but there is not a general intelligence capability to make it act by itself, you know, like to interact with.
That's what everyone. I was going to ask. I mean, it's Mario behind feeding it in a way.
Yeah, but Mario is not. I mean, Mario creates the algorithm, and then the algorithm works by itself. Like it's not that he's feeding it, but the algorithm doesn't improve itself today.
Okay.
So Mario needs to come back and improve it. But you know, like for say that when we do one video that is like 3 months, the algorithm is done, and then Mario is not on top of it.
Yes, but the first time he created the algorithm, or when he's improving it, he's feeding it in a way, right? Or
the ones feeding the algorithm. The ones feeding the algorithm are the ones that vote on the pictures, because that's how the algorithm learns what the public wants.
Okay.
What Mario does is every X amount of months he goes, looks at the new technology, and maybe creates improves it with the changes the algorithm towards the new technologies that are there, or creates something that is gives it a twist. But each time the algorithm in itself, if you didn't want Boto to improve in or to change the way it creates art, you could leave the same algorithm for 1,000 years, like.
Okay, so let's say that
it doesn't need human intervention in that sense.
You created an artist machine. But at the same time...
Yeah, that's the idea.
But at the same time, then what you're saying means that for you, let's say, if I'm something well, maybe you're not at all right, is that an artist, let's say, if Boto, this artist machine, is really an artist machine, then for you, an artist is someone that needs to be told what he has to produce. It's not someone or something that creates because of what he feels, of what he thinks, of what he sees, of what he reacts to.
Like it's difficult to put a name or like is Boto an artist or no, if is this technology an artist or no. But like to me at one point where it would be clear is if at some point say Mario just creates the seed and then the algorithm is improving itself, learning about the world, experiencing his digital world and then coming back and then improving itself and creating a kind of art that is, fully created by it, then I think there is no doubt. Today there's a bit of doubt because also like this, Boto has a team of 7 full-time employees, right? Like they are helping the algorithm do the things that an artist would do. They have relationships, with different institutions. Yeah. Those things cannot be done by a robot.
That's true.
But maybe in 20 years, it could be done.
Okay. You scared me a little.
Maybe in 20 years, you could have an artist that just, a robot that is doing what an artist would do, which is experience the world and
then
tell a story around
what,
it with...
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. That's what I think. I mean, and that's what, well, I think we think at 100 Collectors is the fact that one thing that we feel maybe it's missing in the technology is the feeling, you know, like a very important part in art is a feeling. And you said it just before, is also the way you experience is because the piece. So the artist is passing you through his piece, a feeling. And this is something that I'm not sure. Maybe, of course, it will be developed. I don't know. We will see in the future. But this is the only thing that I'm not sure if a machine will be able to express. That's all. Because, of course, a machine can create an art piece. That's for sure. But that's also...
But it will never transmit you a human feeling because it's not going to have feelings. It can experience something and then create something because of its experience, let's say, but of its learnings, but it will not feel, no?
Yeah, exactly. But maybe we arrive at some point where machines will feel. You never know.
I don't know how, but maybe.
Me neither, but I mean, you are in that project, you will see.
Yeah, like that was the ideal of Boto, no? Like, ideally, we would like to create this perpetual artist, something that could last 1,000 years as long as the internet is connected. That's the end game of Boto.
Okay.
But to get there is still a lot to do. First, in terms of making Boto relevant in the art world, and second, for the technology to be somewhere where it can go fully automatically and it can last. Like a bit like following the Bitcoin ethos of, like, you know, like Bitcoin just exists and it just goes.
Yeah.
That was the idea here, but there's still a long way to go for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And well, actually, you know, what is funny is that I discovered Mario's work the first time. It was the first time that I saw a digital art piece in a collection displayed. And it was a Colección Solo in Madrid. And it was, I must tell you, Celo, I was very confused. Because at that time when I discovered it, I wouldn't say when it was, but let's say 5 years ago, even more than 5 years ago. And it was, well, I was really like starting, no, I already started my professional career in the arts. So, you know, I was like really in this perspective of very traditional art world with galleries and museums and art and everything very physical. And suddenly I arrived to this room and I saw that, and I was like, what is this? And I tried to understand, and it was very confusing for me. And I would love to know, like, how come you and Anne and David were interested about Mario's work in a very initial way?
Was it Memories of a Passerby, the one that's like these faces that change?
Exactly.
Yeah,
that changed.
Yeah. That was great.
It was an amazing piece. It was an amazing piece.
And it's great because, you know, like, in that way, now AI, it's like, we are creatures of habits. We get used to things very fast. Like, now a lot of people are using ChatGPT and Midjourney and all of that. But back then, it really was, first, a technological prowess to do something like that. And second, it was portrayed in a way that most AI artists weren't portraying. You know, like, it was, like, very, you know, it had a presence, the piece in the space.
Yeah, completely. That's why I was so confused. It's because it was not just but it was not a screen on the wall with the digital things happening, but it was, I mean, you could see it in front of it and really experience and see and stay there and see how it was changing and trying to understand. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, for me, it was really a crazy experience.
And the concept of, like, what you're seeing now, you will never see again because the machine will never dream exactly the same face. That's also quite,
exactly.
quite crazy.
Exactly. But how do you discover Mario?
He's a master of the craft, really. And also, like, someone that has been there. Like, if it is true that AI changes the world very abruptly, or at least, you know, it marks a new era of technological progress, Mario was there when everything was, like, you know, like, just in the very infancy of it. So, like, through Mario's career, it's a way of also, like, you know, like, understanding how AI has been evolving, and he's a master of it. Like, he's probably a master, like of the technique, like very few people in the world. if you look at his early works, you know, like you are seeing, it's like seeing those very first photography images that they were just a couple lights. You know, it's getting that kind of like that feeling. And yeah, I don't know, he's a complete pioneer in that sense. And he's a pioneer from the inside because he's not someone that jumped into things because now, you know, like everyone's talking about AI and art and so on. Like, you know, he's been doing this
of course,
forever.
At that time. But how did it come to your mind? Because, well, this collection Solo, just to let people know, it's, I think it started as an adventure with a couple of friends that then became something real. And, well, I would say maybe, tell me if I'm wrong, but I would say that 90% of the collection is physical art, not digital art.
So how
did it come to your mind, to the three of you, like, okay, let's also add digital art and let's put it there and see how people react to it?
So basically the collection started with David and me when more or less about the time when I started 11 Yellow. They were just collecting some art by themselves, and I would be traveling with them, seeing some, seeing all of the art fairs, and just basically as an adventure of having a good time and collecting a few things, nothing very serious. From there, it started to evolve, right? Like things went into actually buying the physical space. Now there is a team at Collection Solo. Like, just as a disclaimer, anything I say about Collection Solo, you know, it's a personal view, right? Like, you know, they have a full on team of you know, like they're an institution in a way. So anything would be just you know, my perspective on things. But I think that it's you know, like since the collection is it's a way of telling the story of our times. And And, you know, David and Anna are both involved in many, say, like, in-the-edge technology projects, things that are very new. And, you know, like, they do have a maybe their percentage of digital life versus physical life is slightly higher than average human. Same for me. So, you know, there's many of those stories that they want to tell about their world that they are digital because, you know, like, it's our world is increasingly digital. From there, if you were to look into digital art world and back then and look into artificial intelligence, it was impossible not to find Mario, right? Like, it's like this is a time where there was very few artists using the technique.
Okay.
Now everything has evolved, and now, you know, like AI art is considered, you know, like if you think about it, if it's not already, in a few months, it will be the technique that has produced the most images in society forever. Like, and it's what, 2 years old in the mainstream or something. Like, it will be everywhere, and it will be, you know, like very even invasive, right? Like, because it becomes free to create in a way with it. But back then, you know, like it was very difficult to not find Mario. That was, you know, like David and Oscar, they would go, you know, like they created something with him, and he also, like, you know, like went, you know, like from the beginning, they created a partnership that has been working really, really well. It's they do it through OnCaos, which is the area of Solo that's a gallery, because Solo is it's just a private collection. But they created OnCaos, which is a gallery just for digital art, which is and it's already, you know, it's I don't know how old OnCaos is, but maybe it's like 5 or 6 years already. So it's and they represent Mario, that's how it came together, like. Sorry?
In Madrid as well, sorry.
In Madrid as well, yeah.
Okay. And, well, actually talking about Madrid and Collection Solo, what do you think Collection Solo, as a private collection, is bringing to the art ecosystem in Madrid? Because, let's say, I mean, when you go to Collection Solo, when you go visit, actually anyone listening to us, if you're in Madrid or if you are planning to go to Madrid, please go and visit it because it's an amazing space with an amazing collection. But it's really, you really have the feeling that you are not in a gallery, you are not in a museum, you are not in a foundation, so it's really something different. So what do you think? What would you say it's bringing to the art ecosystem in the city?
For one, it brings a kind of like a new view. because it's something that, you know, like most people that come into it, come into the space and experience the collection, like everyone is like, wow, like you might like it or not, but like there is this feeling of like, this is strange, this is different, this is out of the normal path. So that for sure brings it into the Madrid art scene. In terms of like the it being, since it's a private collection and on its own private space, I think it opens up a creativity space for David and Anna to kind of like build what they consider they wanted to build. So it's very unique there. It's not a foundation, and foundations normally are forced or are either by law or by different things, forces in society. They're like, they have to more or less collaborate with the public, with public in the sense of like not for everyone, but public in the sense of like from the state. Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot in Spain. And that kind of like, on a way, changes the tone. I'm not going to say it's worse or better, but it changes the tone than being able to do something fully private. It's like, this is the way we want to portray our collection. This is our space. Mm. That's it. I don't have to respond on a way to some certain norms that exist already. Mm. So I think that's one of the things it brings. It also brings a lot of attention into the kinds of art that in Spain you don't see much. Like, you don't see a lot in Spain about AI art, like digital art, certain kinds of artists from Asia, artists from Africa, like that. It's some things that you don't see as much in other spaces in Spain, because Spain is in itself, it's quite a traditional place, more or less.
Bringing spotlight to different type of arts and different type of creations.
Artists from different parts of life, for sure.
I love what you say just before, that it's a collection with the meant of illustrating our times, our contemporary times, and that's I think it's super nice. Well,
and it's very difficult to understand the current times without having a side of, you know, like media, the internet, digital, like, you know, like it's more and more of our lives.
And as you said, more and more. I mean, even if we still are very physical, it's true that digital, I wouldn't say that it's taking over, but I would just say that, what do you think? Do you think digital is taking over the physical?
How do you, like, how much time do you spend with a screen versus 10 years ago?
Too much.
What's the change?
What's the change? Well, I mean, I'm in front of a screen the whole day. Whole day.
Yeah.
I think the only moment that I'm not in front of a screen is when I'm sleeping. Well, I wouldn't say that, but more or less.
You are an extreme case of someone very digital. Yeah.
No, sorry. Well, no, let's say, okay, no, I don't spend my whole day, but yeah, I mean, I work the whole day in front of a screen. Yeah, I work from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m., more or less.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, same.
So let's
say you have your phone.
Yeah, my phone. But yeah, I mean, screens are everywhere.
So it is the story of our times. Like, I'm not saying it's a good story. I'm not gonna be here being like, oh, you know, like super accelerationist, technology is the best thing ever. Like, I'm not that guy, but it is, you know, objectively a big part of the story of today.
Yeah.
How we interact with the digital world.
Yeah.
So I think that in that sense, Solo portrays it very with a lot of class. Like, I think the collection makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. But well, Celo, we could stay for hours, I think, speaking about all these exciting topics. But we are heading to the end of this podcast. And well, as you may know, this is something that we ask to every one of our guests. It's kind of our ritual. Could you please tell me 3 digital artists that you personally like and follow?
Okay, I'm going to go with the most obvious one. Follow Boto. I love Boto. we are not involved in Boto anymore. The project is spin-off. It's a DAO. It has its own team. as 11 Yellow, but still I think Botto is the beginning of a new kind of artist that will be very interesting to watch how it evolves, this kind of like autonomous artists. So Botto is one. I like Sofia Crespo a lot. Mm-hmm. I think she does she makes AI art on a way that, you know, like that transmits peace instead of transmitting a bit of chaos, which is very typical with AI art, that, you know, everything looks chaotic. And I think that, she does a great work, a great job there. And then, you know, like, bit of another thing of someone that's very close, but I think that Mario is it's if someone is interested in AI art, it's worth it going, you know, like reading on Mario's career and seeing how it has evolved. It's a great way of understanding it from the perspective of someone that has been working on it for decades. Okay. And there's very few examples of this. So yeah, I would say that Mario is worth a follow and worth diving into.
Great, Celo. Thank you very much. Well, it was great, really super interesting. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for being here with us today. And again, as I told just before, anyone going to Madrid, please go and visit Collection Solo, and please also follow Botto, just as Celo said. And cool. Well, Celo, hope to see you soon. Take care.
Yep. Thanks for everything.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Ciao, Gina.
Bye. Thank you very much for listening to us today. Unlocked is a podcast brought by 100 Collectors, a private club for discerning art and NFT collectors. You can find us on Instagram, X, and LinkedIn at 100 Collectors, or visit our website 100collectors.art. See you next time.